And we are live. Welcome to On the Corner, the official podcast of PitcherList.com. I'm your host, Eric Smolsky, joined on this Friday morning by Nick Pollock. Nick, we're fixing our hair. It's early, but we've got to get the people the information.
Got to do it. Came out of the shower and my computer was all messed up and everything. So Eric's been really nice, but that means we have no time because he's got to go. And we're going to go through all of these. We also have the PL Pro dashboard with my baseball dashboard inside of it. It is incredible. Oh my gosh. You can get it for 20% off with live dashboard as a promo code. Pitchless.com/premium. Go get it today. That's PL Pro yearly. Go ahead, Eric. Please. Yeah. AL East. No, NL East we're doing today. NL East.
Well, no, AL East because the doubleheader we're going to get through.
Oh, yeah, let's get rid of that.
But yes, just a cosign on the dashboard on that Nick has. It's super, 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 super useful. So now that it's a PL Pro thing, I highly encourage everybody to check it out. We're going to go pretty quickly on this one so you can go back through each of the pitchers, any pitchers that we maybe didn't talk about as much as you would like to, and like click on their last start, look through everything. And so that's the kind of doing your own research we fully support out here.
100%.
Starting in the AL East this week with the Baltimore Orioles. They have Tampa Bay this weekend, and then they are at Seattle and at the Athletics next week. So that is important. Yes. For those starts in Sacramento. It's two-start week for Chris Bassett, but it is St. Louis and at the Athletics. Anything change for you here, Nick? I feel like we've kind of soured a little bit on Brandon Young, at least in terms of he's a streamer. You're going to pitch in good environments next week. Against the Athletics in Sacramento is not one of those environments.
Yeah, I still think that Brandon Young is good. He just had this really weird start where he didn't have the fastballs and the splitters working against lefties as well, but the fastball's still a better pitch than expected, and he did get all the vert that he wanted on it. It's just the secondary isn't really work for him. So I'm still kind of interested in Brandon Young, and I wouldn't write him off.
And are you worried at all about the latest Shane Boz start? The velocity was down a little bit in the last one. We kind of see that, like, it's the end of August,
right?
You know, sometimes you'll get one game blips. Are you paying attention still to like those velocity dips if they're just,
I am,
like, a one-off?
But the curveball was so good, and he just got really unfortunate, I think, in that one against the Yankees. Yes, the cutter isn't really being as much of a thing, but now I think that Boz is still much better than before because the curveball is really cooking.
Yeah. Command overall in that one was fine. And so it's not like, hey, velocity was down and he's all over the place and maybe there are major right. warning signs. So maybe we'll be okay there. I personally just, I would try to avoid Chris Bassett. I combined both of their names. I would try to avoid Chris Bassett for that two-start week. Even though the St. Louis start is, I get it. If you're in a deeper format, I can't also tag on the Sacramento start at the end. But if you're in a deeper format and you want to use the St. Louis start, fine. Just in two start weeks, that's not a risk I'm willing to take.
Yeah.
Moving on to Boston, they are home against San Francisco this weekend. They are at Miami next week and then at the Yankees. And there's a doubleheader in there as well. So that Yankee series is a four-game series. Which means it's going to be a two-start week for Ranger Suarez, and then we are most likely going to see a Brian Bayo bulk relief bullpen game against the Yankees. And I have to say, like, in deeper form, I picked up Bayo in Tout, which is a 15-team league.
Wow.
Because those 4 1/3 to 5 1/3, like, bulk wins. Relief appearances with wins attached to them have been pretty valuable in deeper form.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. And I would actually wonder if he is going on Saturday instead of Patrick Sandoval. At least Sandoval maybe have a very short leash and then you see Bayo after, because that would space it out for Bayo next Saturday as well. So keep that in mind. That could be a very cheap win, especially hosting the Giants for Brian Bayo. I would actually consider that a probable start for Bayo in that scenario.
Yeah. And we have, thanks to you and Kyle Bland, we were chatting the other day about Jake Bennett's four-seam fastball locations since the All-Star break, because that's something we're prepping yes. for Sunday Night Baseball broadcast. Hey. And Jake Bennett's four-seam fastball locations to righties since the All-Star break have been real, real, real bad.
Oh, no.
A lot of down the middle of the plate. That's why we're seeing the results struggle a little bit. And that's why also, you know, we talked about how four-seam up is so huge for Bennett, because The four seam shape isn't really great, and he doesn't have a lot of velocity. It also helps to set up that changeup. And so, you know, the Red Sox also pushed his start back. This is a guy who missed all of 2024 with surgery, came back last year, pitched, I believe, 71 innings in 2025, is already up over like approaching 100 innings this year. And so fatigue is certainly something that's factoring in here. So if you want to use Jake Bennett this weekend because the Giants aren't a particularly great team, I understand. But there are some alarm bells going off here. And the Red Sox don't have a lot of rotation depth behind him. So this is going to be interesting to see what happens over the last 6 weeks.
Yeah, Jake Bennett is a probable for that start against the Giants. But then I think he's a questionable guy otherwise. I mean, consider him a Toby. And that's just a really good matchup that I don't want to turn down.
Yes, and we're going to come back to Jake Bennett later when I talk about him in comparison to another lefty who's going to be starting over the weekend, but we're going to move to the Yankees. They have Toronto this weekend, and then it's Houston and Boston next week. It's just a two-game series against Houston, and so it's a six-game week for the Yankees, which means, as of right now, what RotoWire has is Elmer Rodriguez coming up to start one of those Saturday doubleheaders. And so we would not have a two-start week for anybody. So just keep an eye on that situation.
Now, one thing to consider with that is, let's say Max Fried is ready. And they're right now RotoWire has that for the Sunday. But yeah, that could very well be that Saturday, just like it was before with Max Fried coming back. And that would mean then Will Warren would be the two-start for Sunday. And that could be his last outing in the rotation, because then the Yankees would have all five of their guys, and he's the one, not Weathers.
Yeah. We did see Rodon come back. Curious what you've seen from Rodon. And then he gets Toronto this weekend and then Boston next week. Are you just all systems go?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I'm probably going to ultimately land on a probable start for that Rodon game just because against Toronto, just because he's not fully stretched out yet. Like, I don't think there's a chance of a six inning game as he didn't throw over 70 pitches, right? So he's going to be up to like 75 or so, pushing the 80. Then, okay, then that's five innings likely with Rodon, who's not the most efficient pitcher. But yeah, you should be fine with Rodon. It's likely not going to be the 32% strikeout rate, 3 ERA, you know, 115 whip, whatever it was last year. But he's a very good pitcher, and you should be happy with him the rest of the way.
Yeah, and if Elmer Rodriguez does get that start, I would not be chasing him. This is a Boston lineup that now has Adley Rutschman back, and by next weekend should also have Roman Anthony back. Becomes a little bit of a deeper lineup that I wouldn't want to go after with somebody like Elmer.
Yeah.
Tampa Bay gets Baltimore this weekend, and then Detroit and San Diego next week. Right now, there's no two-start week scheduled according to RotoWire, because there's a potential that Griffin Jacks will return for that series against the Padres. That may be a stretch, because I don't think that Tampa Bay really needs to rush him back. We know he's making a rehab start. They're in a pretty good spot for the playoffs, and so I think that they could afford to be cautious with Griffin Jacks. And so my gut says he won't make that start, but again, we have to see how it all plays out. I'm curious if you've seen anything from Tampa Bay Rays Freddy Peralta that changes your opinion. We do know that he's doing what we thought he would do, which is more same-handed changeups. It's not necessarily like making a massive difference, but they're trying to make the changes that we thought they would try to make.
Yeah, it's still Freddy Peralta. And it's just, why would you, at this point, it's like three starts now. Nothing's been great. I mean, sure, you had a poor quality start in Sacred Verde, right? Cool. Awesome. You saw all the vert increase in the high four seamers in that game in the Trop finally, and everything else was terrible. Mm-hmm. And it's just, oh yeah, you are Professor Chaos for a reason. So yeah, it's always he's a werewolf now. Once in a full moon, he will have a great start and be a beast.
He's a werewolf now. I like it. We had McClanahan come back. It was a short outing, but he's at Baltimore this weekend and then against the Padres. Are you backed? Because it's kind of like a Rodon situation as well for you.
Yeah, he is. He was limited to under 60 pitches. He was very frustrated about it. And here's the thing. McClanahan, even when he was healthy, wasn't actually at his peak, right? Mm-hmm. It wasn't, you know, eight strikeouts a game or something like that. It was like four or five. And in that last game, the first rehab back, it was not good McClanahan. It was 95, 96. And then you had this, the changeup, the slider, the fastball, all of them were not commanded as he wanted them inside the zone and out of it. So I would be a little cautious with McClanahan, who's not going to go 80 pitches in this game.
Agreed. And then Ian Seymour is great and continues to be great. Love for you, Ian Seymour. Toronto Blue Jays get the Yankees this weekend. Then they're Kansas City and Seattle. It is just a two-game series against Kansas City. So this is just a five-game week for the Blue Jays next week. So we'll keep that in mind. Are we still kind of in Dylan Cease and not nobody else, but nobody else kind of like locked in? Everybody else is maybe a streamer.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, it's funny. I was like, what about Kevin Gausman? I'm like, oh, right. Duh. Right. Right. So Spencer Arrighetti, I have my minor league dashboard now that I've told our developer that before the end of the season, you guys will have. And I know that's maybe not in time necessarily for the minor leagues to be done, but we're going to try and get that out as fast as we can. Oh. And one of my favorite parts about it is that I have a page dedicated to just rehab starts. These are guys who are officially on the IL for their teams, but have started in the minor leagues. Mm-hmm. And so I can track these, especially the ones that have AAA. And Spencer Arrighetti is someone who's normally around like 92, 93. At his peak, he's like 94, 95. In his most his latest AAA start, the one before he's returning, 90 in change. Mm-hmm. Ugh. I mean, sure, you want to say it's rehab. He might be ramping up. It's very possible. It's harder. But for someone like Arrighetti, who's trying to really establish himself, this isn't like a veteran who is gearing up and ramping up. This is someone who's trying to be at his peak so that he is worthy of that start in the first place to come back. I am so out of this on Spencer Arrighetti. And Max Scherzer's not looking great. Bieber is throwing better breaking balls. Mm-hmm. And I am very intrigued by Shane Bieber. So we'll see how that goes. I believe he went last night, though. And last night, we did see 7 strikeouts in 7 innings in 1 earned run, and you had a 75% strike rate on the curveball. Actually, the changeup also was amazing. 71% strikes with 21% swing strikes on that. So we're seeing that better four-seamer, 18 to 19 inches of vert now on that four-seamer for Shane Bieber compared to last year's, which is it was about 17 to 18. It's kind of interesting. I think I'm going to push Shane Bieber into the probable start at this point. It is starting to look like Bieber's found something.
Yeah. And I should note, I misspoke because we are missing on this table, Nick. We're missing Thursday. And Thursday is a day where there is a game. And so this is a 6-game week for the Blue Jays. And so it is a 2-start week for Max Scherzer, who you were talking about before.
This is all my fault, guys. I did this completely. I don't know how I missed it.
All of Nick's analysis holds true. It's a 2-start week for Max Scherzer. It's Kansas City and Seattle. Again, like if you're in a deeper format and you're desperate, fine. But like, I don't love the win. I mean, maybe there's one win there against the Royals, but I think there's probably going to be some better
options. Yeah. I mean, he has he still has some juice. But, you know, you don't want to do the rattle. I don't know what the term is for like when you have the straw and you're getting the bubbles at the end of it. What's that sound called? It's not a slurp. So I'm going with rattle.
A slurp.
It's not a slurp. Slurp is like with your, you know, when you have the cup or something.
Sure.
But like you're pulling on the straw and there's no more juice left.
Oh.
Right. I'm calling it a rattle. Okay. I don't know. I got nothing.
We could look for a better word for that, but I think
I tried.
Okay.
I got nothing. Help me, everyone.
I'm sure you're right. I'm sure you did come up with something. Knowing you, I'm sure you did try. I'm sure you were just racking your brain.
I was. Rattle's the best I got.
Moving on to the AL Central. You got the White Sox ever at the face the Mets this weekend. It's Texas and at Minnesota next week. That's lined up to be a 2-start week for Jose Urquidy, which we don't really need to chase. But this is still Sean Burke in basically any matchup you feel good about. And Anthony Kay against the Rangers in Chicago is certainly going to be on the streaming radar.
Yeah. I mean, Sean Burke, I really just hope that is like, he's okay. Please. 4.1 innings, twice of disappointments, sandwiching a 20 whiff start. That was amazing. So what do we got? I don't know. I just hope it's great. Please be amazing today against the Mets.
Yeah. Fingers crossed for you, Sean Burke. Cleveland, they're at Colorado this weekend. And then it's a pretty nice schedule next week against the Angels and the Royals. That leads to a two-start week for Parker Messick, which you don't need to tell us. You know, you don't need us to tell you what to do there. Gavin Williams is against the Angels. You're going to love that. Foster Griffin is against the Royals. He seemed to bounce back a little bit in his last start, but also it's the Royals. And then it's Joey Cantillo against the Angels. And the Angels are a bit of a mess. And so this feels like just a good schedule for those Guardians pitchers who, you know, the Cantillo, Foster Griffin guys that like maybe are more fringy, but now they're in plus matchups. And so we feel pretty good about it next week.
Yeah. By the way, Joey Cantillo has been dropped in a lot of leagues, I've noticed. And even in the Tau Wars Champions League that I went on the podcast last night on RotoWire, huge thanks to Todd Zola for bringing me on there. I noticed that, yeah, they don't have Joey Cantillo in that 12-team head-to-head league daily transactions. Mm-hmm. Because I imagine that Colorado start. But guys, if he's out there, I would absolutely be picking him up because after this, you want him for the Angels next week. This is a very good pitcher in a very good rhythm. I'm still very much rolling with Cantillo.
Yeah. And I just want to say about Foster Griffin, what you could see from one of the last starts, it's just not like when he was cruising before. He's still usable because he's a lefty with a deep pitch mix and kind of knows how to use it and then is in a good pitching organization. But this is not like, hey, is Foster Griffin a top 25 starter? Like we were back in June or whatever.
Yeah.
But he's still going to be usable in this matchup, I believe, against the Royals. Detroit at Kansas City this weekend. Then it's Tampa Bay and the Dodgers next week, which is a two-start week for Keydair Montero. That's a bummer because I've actually been relatively in on him recently for the same thing I just talked about with Foster Griffin, that Montero is a little bit of a kitchen sink guy who's got a deep pitch mix and he's utilizing more of his pitches this year. And I'm actually okay in deeper formats with that Tampa Bay start on Monday. But it's tough with the Dodgers in the second part of that.
Yeah, it is really tough with it. And if you are into whip, if you're like, yo, I don't really care so much about my ERA and his strikeouts, I just really need to lower my whip. Montero is that guy. It's insane. He has like a super low walk rate and a super low hip or nine. I don't really understand it, but he is that guy. So he has a one whip right now, Eric, for the 133 innings. It's something ridiculous.
I mean, I told, like, when I wrote that article on pitchers who get more out of their, you know, just produce better because of location and a deep pitch mix, I was surprised that Montero checked so many of the boxes for that article. But those are guys like Parker Messick and like Foster Griffin was in there, and I was like, oh, Keydair Montero, okay. But you know, you look into it and there's a lot of, you know, especially with some shape changes to the curveball that he made in the offseason, there's just a little bit, it raises the floor a little bit of what he did, and he may not have some kind of like electric ceiling, but raising the floor is still important for fantasy purposes. Jackson Jobe, we've now seen a few starts. I'm curious where you're at and where you're at on him next week against Tampa Bay.
I'm laughing because Jackson Jobe is just the same story again of it's what we saw when he first came up and then got Tommy John, which was, hey, your stuff looks really good. You should be getting so many whiffs. Your slider is like this 91 mile per hour slider that has extra sweep and you just can't get strikeouts with it. You threw it, I think, twice in a two strike count and you're trying to do all this stuff with your four seamer, which is hard. And it's fine. It's not a overwhelming Jared Jones four-seamer, right? Commanding it well, but that's fine. Okay, but it's not that pitch. And he isn't getting anything out of his secondaries as far as whiffs. So it could be a Troy Melton, where over time he expands to a cutter and then becomes something more. But he isn't Troy Melton in that he can't throw as many strikes and have the varied secondaries to get the outs.
Yeah.
So I'm tepid. It's like, once again, I feel I can't really drop him because I really want to see what two or three more starts look like. But I have to imagine, wait, Nick, you are repeating what you did in the spring of 2025. And so I would suggest for everybody with Jackson Jobe, play the matchups as much as you can. You have Tampa Bay, which I think is fine for him.
Right.
But if it's a situation where you're debating between Jackson Jobe and someone else, and that is going to be like, hey, that's a six inning guy. That's like a maybe like a Peter Lambert kind of thing. I would go for Peter Lambert. I would go with the value now over value later conversation with Jackson Jobez. It's not guaranteed quite yet that it is going to pan out. So sometimes to keep in mind with these, like with these rankings, I do take into consideration if you have this guy, this could be more. And that's why I would probably start versus do not or questionable start, because there is the benefit of holding past it. And we're back from our break here. Eric, we got to talk about the Twins. We got to go really quickly.
Yes. Well, we got to do Kansas City before we do the Twins.
And oh, yeah, of course. Great.
And then next week it's Toronto and Cleveland. And is there anybody that you can really trust in this rotation other than Noah Cameron, who's pitching really well right now?
Unreal.
And Waka has good matchups against the Tigers and the Guardians that we feel pretty good about.
I mean, yeah, that's pretty much it there. And I will also mention, guys, you should listen to the Kraft episode, me ranking with Eno. I think it's a really fun conversation where I'm obviously someone who is favoring the, hey, this guy's in rhythm and I believe in this now over the past month or so. While Eno is very much more disciplined and like the projections are not favorable of this, Nick. It's just like history did not just start right now. And the guys who've been doing poorly are likely to still do well. And the guys that are doing really well are likely not to continue doing well. So it's a really good conversation on both sides of that that philosophy. Go take a listen. I'm very much into Noah Cameron. He's not.
We had this. It feels like a deja vu of a conversation about Noah Cameron last year when he was rolling and we were like, this shouldn't stick around.
Right.
But again, that also
all the whisk right now. Higher heart of velocity
thing and everything. So yeah,
good command. We go with
Wrapping up the AL Central with those Twins. It's San Diego this weekend. It's at Sacramento, so keep that in mind next week. And then the White Sox. They right now we have a no two start week because of the Joe Ryan's potential return, and so just keep an eye on the schedule. We'll see what happens there. But it's Zebby and Taj Bradley and Joe Ryan potentially in Sacramento, which is, it's really tough there. I'm just curious with Connor Prelip or Dean Kramer against the White Sox. Are you into either one of those guys?
I think, okay, Prelip had a terrible start, but he is your typical young gun where it's, you see the stuff, you see the ability, and it's just about execution per at bat. And so in a game, you see him go 7 strikeouts or so, but then he has like 5 hits, 2 walks, and 300 runs. And it's just like, oh, right, okay, you're not as efficient yet. And it's development right in front of us. So we just had a really bad game. Now it's very possible he has a good game. It's really, we don't quite know. So if you're chasing that on a Friday of like, hey, I needed some sort of 6-7 strikeout game, Prelip actually could do that against the Padres, who have been much hotter lately, but generally are still not as good against the left-handers. Mm-hmm. And Dean Kramer is someone who had that amazing game against the revenge game against the Orioles, and then didn't go as well the next time. But let me tell you right now, that splitter that allowed a 3-run shot from Alec Boehm was up and in and like slightly above the zone. And I don't know how Boehm got that in the final inning. He went 1 earned run in 5. And then this was in the 6th and had that 3-run. It's like, no, he's in a better place. But then again, he's a righty against the Padres. And I don't really always know. I mean, I used to call him Dean Wolf, right? For being a werewolf. And of course, Teen Wolf. So we know that he can be variable as well.
Yeah, that's what, you know, Dean Kramer's always been the fringe, one of those fringe 15-team league guys.
Yeah, he's a hipster and a 15-teamer, yes.
Yeah. Moving to the Athletics, they get Houston this weekend, then it's Minnesota and Baltimore next week. All of those games next week are in Sacramento, so keep that in mind. It's a two-start week for Jeffrey Springs next week, Minnesota, Baltimore, but again, in Sacramento. This weekend, JT Ginn, Jacob Lopez, and Jack Perkins are at Houston. Lopez, you know, has continued to pitch well, and I feel like we're, you know, riding that while the results are there.
Yeah. So, okay. With Ginn, it's just a Vargas rule, right? I mean, it's just like, I don't believe this at all. Mm-hmm. And then with Perkins, yeah, you have him on the road, and sometimes he's there, and he just won like 3.2 innings. And it's just, it's like, what are we doing? What are we doing with Perkins? I don't quite know. And Lopez, of course, yes. I mean, this is the biggest argument I had with, you know, I went to a bit with him about it, but he had him very low. And I'm like, this is Jacob Lopez, who did this exact thing last summer. He's executed the exact same way. He wasn't executing this in the first few months. I am just rolling with this for as long as it will go. And the second it stops, fine. It is a perfect example of a Vargas rule, but this is a Vargas rule where it's not like a boring, like 4 strikeout guy. This is someone who has potential of going like 8-10 on a given night.
Yeah, and he's been doing it in Sacramento as well. So
yes,
you know, Baltimore in Sacramento. I understand if the start against Houston is good this weekend, I understand keeping the train moving against Baltimore. Houston, they're against the Athletics at home this weekend. And then it is the Yankees and the Mets next week. As of right now, we have a two-start week for Ethan Pecco lined up. Again, a real person, Ethan Pecco, really in the Astros rotation.
I'm honestly really disappointed he doesn't pitch for the Padres. Because then it would be Pecco Park. And then, so Pecco was very much of like, I call him like the Walker Buehler, which is a basic textbook of a receiver, all the pitches, but none of them are the thing you want to keep reading. This isn't, you know, an actual like, oh, amazing fastball, amazing slider, amazing whatever. And he didn't even go four innings in his MLB debut. Of course, the pilot rule exists. So pitchless initial line, often terrible. Fine. I don't want to touch that one. And a 15 teamer, okay. I understand. But I'd be surprised if he went six in either one of these. You're hoping for five. I think it's okay. And it's not really one that I would circle for this. Christian Javier is still doing everything he possibly can to try to figure out how do I make this all work with the cutter and everything like that. And I love the fact that he's throwing strikes and he's gaining more whiffs. And I think with every start, it gets a little bit better. So I actually am encouraged by that. I have that as a questionable start. Hunter Brown's four-seamer is just what is going on with you. Yeah. And I have no idea what we're going to get from him moving forward. I have him as a probable because it's just like, you got to do it still. But as long as the four-seamer is like a 50% strike rate, we're never going to get that that Hunter Brown. Keep going with Lambert. Wisniewski is maybe has good enough command. He gets a sinker inside, then the super's away, and then maybe the four-seamer goes up. Like, we've seen that before from him. So I am very curious, especially away from Sacraverde. And the Yankees are not a good offense right now. They just really aren't. So I think that's okay.
Wisniewski, we've talked about before. It's like if he's going to face a lot of righties, it's just more appealing than if he's going to face a lot of lefties. Right. And that Athletics lineup is really, really, really beat up. So away from Sacramento is a soft-ish landing spot. The Angels get Texas this weekend and then Cleveland and Philadelphia next week. It's two-start week for Walbert, Urania, Cleveland, and Philadelphia. But I do want to talk to you about George Klassen because a pretty good last start, and then you wrote about George Klassen. And I think there is a misconception that you were like pouring cold water on the start and the potential of George Klassen rather than just suggesting that crossbody mechanics can lead to inconsistencies, just generally speaking. And this isn't to say, hey, George Klassen, he's not good. It's right. To say, hey, that was a good start, but this type of mechanical profile can just lead to more inconsistency than you'd like to see.
Exactly. It was just an interesting thing. It explains why we've seen George Klassen be the guy that he has been, right? It's George Klassen is someone who has a really good slider. It's amazing gyro slider. And I'm starting to realize that I like the gyro one as opposed to like the extra 5 inches of sweep right now. We're just seeing more whiffs from that. So I dig this. Velocity is there. Flatness is there. It's really just about command of it and throwing strikes. And what do you know? The strikes have come back the last two games as opposed to the first one. So I am much more encouraged by George Klassen than I was before. Yeah.
Yeah, and I like this start against Texas this weekend. I like it less against Philadelphia. It's a little bit of a revenge narrative if you're into, hey, you traded me away as a prospect. But, you know, I don't think that matters too much. And then, you know, like we got Kikuchi back. I'm not super intrigued. And then I know that Grayson Rodriguez had a good start, but I still find myself incredibly skeptical.
Yeah, Kikuchi, we can't do. We just got to wait and see there. Not a good rehab start. The last one was absolutely just destructive. I am curious about Grayson Rodriguez and seeing how he develops. If you can get the secondaries, the breakers really to be good, then we're talking because the four-seamer is good enough to be fine. The changeup is actually a solid pitch right now, but the slider is at 84 and the curveball slower. And if he has a cutter in between, I want that 88, 89 bullet or something like that could be a real game changer for Grayson Rodriguez over time. I am very curious who comes in for the Angels and maybe changes things a little bit moving forward. So there might be some hope there for Grayson Rodriguez still. I'd monitor it. And against the Guardians, that would be a lot of changeups as opposed to the necessity for the slider and the curveball. Mm-hmm. So there might be some success there. Reed Detmers we're just rolling with. And Urania, I know, just didn't have like the most ideal start or whatever. Like, you still go with that.
Yeah. And we are moving to the Seattle Mariners. It's time. We are getting Cade Anderson this week against the Cubs. Next week, the Mariners will get Philadelphia and Toronto. As of right now, Cade Anderson would start against Toronto. Looks like it'd be a six-man rotation. We'll see what they do. Cade Anderson, this is a little bit. I was talking about Jake Bennett before. I was alluding to Cade Anderson just in the sense that they are pitchers where command is very crucial to their success. Cade Anderson does get good vertical movement on the four-seam fastball, but this is a guy who his two best pitches are a slider and a changeup. The slider is a heavy, heavy, heavy zone rate pitch and strike pitch for him, which is good. He can also get whiffs with it, but it can act as a strike pitch, which is important because it means he won't have to always attack hitters with a four-seamer. And then the changeup is a really good secondary pitch as well. And so because he's really good at putting that four-seamer up and into righties, then that sets up the changeup low and away. You have that slider mix in as well. And so, you know, this is not going to be a guy with an overpowering fastball who's going to dominate hitters. And so there may be a little bit of time to figure out the MLB ball, which is different, and the MLB mm-hmm. strike zone, which is different. But this is an upper echelon pitching prospect.
Right. Okay. So Cade Anderson, I saw him in March 13th, spring training, right? And I was like, okay, cool. I finally understand. I'm trying to get a good sense of this guy. So what he does is he has a 93 mile per hour four seamer, but it has 18 inches of vert. And so that I kind of read as is, okay, you probably have a high arm angle. And your slider is a gyro with a -1/3. And he does have not much cut on that four seamer. So maybe it is more like that 42 average arm angle, which would be great, honestly, instead of like a 55 or something like that, that make the bird good. Now, the changeup is underneath at 8 inches below that. This is all from March 13th. He could be better since. And then you have a curveball, which is a big boy at 80. So from this, the slider is fine. The changeup is fine. And it's really about, is that four-seamer actually like this amazing, amazing pitch? He earned one whiff on 22 thrown in that spring training game on that four-seamer, which is not encouraging. And I say this often. Guys who are changeup focused in the minors overperform the minors. And it's not always translating into the majors. A lot of the time, especially like right-handed changeup focused guys do so well in the minors. And then they come here and it's like, okay, you can do well, but it's not quite as good. It's so frustrating. The minors do a smart thing where they avoid their good pitchers into AAA because it's the PCL. They do this all the time. They did it with Wu, they did it with Miller, and they're doing it with Cade Anderson now. But that means I don't have data. I don't have proper data for Cade Anderson. So what do we have? We have the wonderful Lance Brazowski. And I got to say, guys, if you're not subbed to his Substack, you should be. He does a great report on things across the majors, and he has more data than I do of the he has AA, single A data a lot that I'm not able to get. So from his article today, I'm literally reading it right now. I have not read it yet. He is saying he has the same thing, the 87 mile per hour gyro slider. He has incredible command of it, and he throws it 71% of the time against right-handers in the zone. So in the zone, 71% of the time against right-handers, which is really incredible. No one does that. And it's really his changeup is the biggest whiff pitch that he has. I would imagine that's going to be a big thing against right-handers, but it's a 51% whiff rate in the minors versus 33%, which is average whiff, not swing strike rate. And I hate that we use whiff rate. I'm so sorry, Lance, but you got to do swing strike rate. It's just whiff rate drives me nuts because I don't know how often overall all pitches you do.
Yeah.
But if he has impeccable command, he's getting whiffs that often. It's going to go down. And I'm not really seeing too much on his four seamer in here in this. So that's where I'm at with Cade Anderson. Pick him up, see how it goes. With everybody else, Bryce Miller, you got to not pitch right now. I mean, it's questionable, but like he's just not there. The very least, he is going to be at home, and that's cool. So if you want to do questionable start for that, fine. George Kirby, same idea, honestly. I'm just like, I'm done with it. Just go to the right side of the rubber, and we'll see what happens. You should be experimenting all the way through at this point. I think you're way too hittable with your current angle, and I really hope he experiments. I really do. Logan Gilbert, obviously, go with Emerson Hancock. I'm more impressed because he did showcase sinker command inside and sweepers away to right-handers. So that's where we're at with the Mariners. Wu, I hope, is fine with a sore shoulder. We think he's starting and on Sunday, and it doesn't surprise me that Kate Anderson's coming up because that might mean that there is a problem with Brian Wu, or maybe they just like, you know what, six man, because all of you guys are pushing it now.
Struggle.
And, pushing the innings. You guys have not been hurt, save for... who was it that came back from injury?
Well, Logan Gilbert at the start of the year. Yeah,
Bryce Miller, right. Everyone else has been just routinely starting. So, that makes sense to me. And we hope for the best.
And we should just note, again, expectations. Like, even if Kate Anderson comes up and is a very good pitcher, like, just don't look at the double-A stats and expect this, like, 106 ERA. And, like, you know, his double-A stats are insane. It's obviously going to be worse against major league hitters. I don't think that that's a controversial statement, but I think that if like he, you know, allows like two runs in five and two thirds innings or in six innings, people are going to be like, he's fine. Like it's not going to be the type of dominance you're seeing in the minors. That doesn't mean he's bad. And just so we know, he threw almost 100 innings at LSU last year. So there should be no concerns about Cade Anderson's innings. The rest of the way, he's already on track to like underperform what he did in college. So just if you're worried about like how many times is he going to start, I think assume they go six man just to be safe, and he will start from now until the end of the year.
Exactly. So we'll see what happens, and good luck. And we've got the Rangers coming up here. Yes. Eric,
last one. They get the Angels this weekend, the White Sox, and then the Brewers. DeGrom. I continues to be kind of the one that I'm most confident in. I know Cal Quantrill is like kind of doing fine and gets the Angels.
Cal Quantrill's not just doing fine. He's killing it right now, man.
I know.
And Cal Quantrill against the Angels in Arlington is a questionable start for me. I'm just going to tell you right now, like that is surprisingly good. And oh, by the way, I should have mentioned before, Grayson Rodriguez did kill it last night. Seven innings of zero runs, six Ks. Yeah. I've screwed up. I should have told you guys all about that one before. And what does he do? He goes 67% strikes on his changeup and has a four-seamer that returned 11 over 63 whiffs. But unfortunately, the breaking balls are not there. Anyway, Cal Quantrill kind of cool right now. Kumar Rocker, slider is down and sinker is up and away. And maybe that can work again. Jack Leiter might come back. We'll see what happens there. He hasn't really impressed me in his rehab so far. Mackenzie Gore is locating well. Four seamers and changeups. And guess what? I'm so excited about this game tonight on Friday for Mackenzie Gore. Because he just killed him with like the greatest changeup game I've ever seen from him. It was a 12 over 22 whiffs on it. And then after, what do you do? Impeccable four-seamers upstairs. So like now you've got the best of both worlds. Go kill it, please, and continue this, Mackenzie Gore. Bradford's not the worst thing in the world, okay? I know he throws 80 miles per hour, but like that's a questionable start against the Angels. And if he does well enough there, then he could actually do well against the Brewers as well.
Yeah, I like that start against Angels. I would use that start. Moving on to the NL, starting with the Braves. Milwaukee this weekend, and then it's the Dodgers and Colorado, not in Coors, in Atlanta next week. We should see AJ Smith-Shawver up and in the rotation next week.
No. Continuing, because he's just, look, guys, after the first start, I said, look, he gets one or two whiffs on 40-plus four-seamers. Yeah. And it's a splitter otherwise, and then the curveball is bad, and that's it. Like, I don't want this. And I was like, no, well, you forgot about AJ Smith-Shawver. Look, okay. Then he starts the next one. It's just no. Like, the splitter worked really well. I'm glad. But the four-seamer went 0 for 20 whiffs for AJ Smith-Shawver. And now he gets the Dodgers, and it's just, this is not that guy. Also, the velocity was down two ticks. It wasn't 97 anymore. It was 95. I can't do this.
Yeah. And when I was, like, up and in the rotation meeting, he's going to continue. It wasn't a one start. There's not up and down happening anymore. He's going to stick, I imagine, through the rest of the regular season, but who knows? And I think it's important to know, like, even when I was in on the idea of stashing AJ Smith-Shawver when he was coming back, because it's a good team. There was a rotation spot, but this was like, I understand that he is a name that we have come to be familiar with in terms of when he was a prospect, but it wasn't like his pre-injury numbers with the Braves were so electric last year that you're like, oh, we've got to get him back. He was fine. And if I'm remembering last year correctly, his initial starts were not fine. And he made some adjustments and he deepened the pitch mix and he tried to kind of like, you know, do a little bit of what Spencer Schwellenbach had done after Schwellenbach's like first MLB starts were not particularly good. But this was never a slam dunk, like high upside guy. And now he's coming off of injury and the whiffs aren't there. And like, maybe he starts to figure it out as it goes through, and that's fine. And if you want to keep him on your bench in deeper formats and see, because the team context is really good, like totally fine. But I'm with you on, I'm not pulling this trigger against the Dodgers. I'm far more into Tyler Mahle at Milwaukee this weekend, but home against the Rockies next week.
He's just on a tear. His command has been unreal. I mean, it wasn't as good last time, but two ago, it was an A-plus locations with our POV cards, which is so great. And I will mention, at least with the real estate broker, Grant Holmes, that three of his last four games have been zero earned runs in six innings. And I just want to tell you, he's only done that once, or actually did it twice earlier this season, which is kind of wild. But I think it was, what, four games total of six innings, Breyer? And 3.2 against the Diamondbacks, fine. But he had 16 whiffs, and he's doing it with the four-seamer a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like, it's kind of weird. The slider is doing great things as it should, but the four-seamer is coming in and out and actually getting some results on that too. He's in some of the disco with sliders, and it's kind of working now for him. Look, it's an 85-mile-per-hour gyro, and it's whatever, but maybe there's something there after this Dodgers start. And Martin Perez, don't count him out, guys. Just don't count him out.
Never count out Martin Perez. Moving on to... the Marlins, it's Washington this weekend. It's Boston and Washington next week. The Marlins continue to just be kind of like Yuri Perez and Sandy Alcantara. You can pitch them basically anytime. And then I wouldn't trust the rest of the rotation. I will say that like there's a very strong chance that I am very pro Jansen Junk in 2027 because I just see an arsenal that should lead to more whiffs. And there are no whiffs. They're just, they continue to not be there because he's in the zone so often. If you're in a deeper format and you want to try it against the Nationals and your hope is ratios and not strikeouts, fine. Go. I think you can go for that, but the whiffs are not there. I'm going to convince myself in the off season that we can make some changes and we can get some whiffs.
Yeah. And Yuri Perez is looking great. And yes. I'm really upset that Sandy Alcantara is throwing like all these four seamers and two strike counts. And like, hi, you have other things. And please just stop trying to do it. He threw, like, I want to say, like, 18 four-seamers up and in actually decent location of lefties. Zero of them got a strikeout. The one strikeout he had last game to try to, you know, make put butter on your bread was a called strike three down and away to Trey Turner, right-hander. It was unreal. I can't believe it. So please fix that, Sandy.
The Mets, they get the White Sox this weekend. Then it's Milwaukee and Houston. It's two start week lined up for Zach Thornton, Milwaukee and Houston. This is a Houston team that we've talked about has a ton of right-handed hitters. So that might be okay for Zach Thornton. Remember that Zach Thornton is not one of those lefties that leans heavily on a changeup. Mm-hmm. He's talked about increasing his usage of it, but he is not a swatch. And so the right-handed heavy lineup is maybe not as confidence inspiring as it would be for somebody like Noah Cameron. So that is a rough two start week. Manaea continues to pitch relatively well with added velocity. And so White Sox this weekend, Brewers next week, I'm okay with it.
Yeah, it's, you know, I will say Zach Thorne is like, all right, you throw a cutter in up and in really well to right-handers, right? That is the thing that he does super well. And I can see him going 5-6 innings like a very basic Toby continuing on. But for the most part, I mean, Christian Scott, Eno's convinced me a little bit more about Christian Scott. I still feel like he needs that pitch that is underneath all the batters at the bottom of the zone. And he threw this 90.7 mile per hour sinker. And it's been weird. It's kind of existed throughout the year, but I think it's a changeup and it's just being classified as a sinker. I got to figure out more what that is. I want him to throw it. He threw an amazing whiff once. And I was like, cool, I'm done. I'm not going to do this again the rest of the game. I just want that to happen. But he's doing the Candle McSanchez, the lefty, so well. Four seamers upstairs with cutters coming back down. And the sweeper, he's just not getting low because it's more of a hand of God sweeper that is like a plus six vert. But otherwise, I mean, you have Stock, who just doesn't really go long into the games, unfortunately. And McLean, who McLean is, I'm going to debate what to do with McLean again next year. Like, it's the same thing that we just went through of, I buy it, I don't buy it, I buy it, I don't buy it. Like, is he going to develop more? Because right now, Nolan McLean has the things, but he just can't really, like, figure out what to do when and how to get it where he wants to. But he has such good stuff, such good movement. As long as he's around the zone every time, he should be competitive.
Moving on to the Phillies. The Phillies get St. Louis this weekend, and then it's Seattle and L.A. It's two-start week next week for Zach Wheeler. We're still feeling really good about Luzardo, Sanchez, and Zach Wheeler. We're still feeling not so good about Aaron Nola. And I am back to feeling cautiously optimistic about Andrew Painter, especially because the matchups are St. Louis and the Angels. And so I, at least in this short stretch, I am back in on Andrew Painter. We've talked about the move from the splitter to the changeup. That has been a really positive development for him. We still want him to continue to pitch backwards more consistently. That might be an adjustment that takes, you know, a little bit more time to become a consistent factor in his approach. But again, I will take the positive changes when your next two opponents are the Cardinals and the Angels.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's just too meh for me right now. And it is a weird thing about, like, breaking balls, just not getting whiffs. Slider and sweeper executed beautifully. No whiffs. No one's chasing these. Mm-hmm. And so that is a question I often have of, like, why is it that these big stuff pitches just aren't getting the whiffs in the exact spots that you would want them to? Like, this should work two strike counts. Like, what is going on? To me, that's either two things. It's sequencing or it's tipping of some kind. And what that can be is, hey, you're on the, you know, you're making it more obvious. There's no deception. As it comes out of your hand, they can pick it up really well. Or there's something else going on with it, right? I think if you take every pitcher and just take their stuff and say, cool, it's going to go here in these situations, it should get far better results. Because we're not, it weirds me out. It feels like there's something going on that Andrew Painter isn't necessarily, like, I don't know what else we're supposed to do at this point. So I'm kind of moving away from Andrew Painter at the moment, but hopefully everything is good. And by the way, we got to look at this. We're going very long on this. I said we had to go very quickly, so we're going to take a quick break.
Before we move on to the Nationals, I just want to say with Andrew Painter, there was a really, really good write-up by Cole Weintraub, who's a Phillies reporter for NBC Sports Philadelphia. You could go check that out on Twitter. He just talked about how Painter himself commented after the last start that, like, this is the best he felt his four seamer has been in a very, very long time.
Hurt was
that
higher. Four
seamer in the last start was up to 97. The vertical, the IVB was up to over 18 inches.
Yes.
And so
that's a great point.
He made a comment that there was a grip change is what Cole Weintraub is reporting from having talked to Andrew Painter, is that he changed where his index finger was on the seams, and was actually trying, his fingers were a little bit more up on the seam than they were previously. And that Painter talked about trying to increase what they called thumb tuck on the ball. And so again, just, I encourage you to read what Cole Weintraub wrote on Twitter, but the idea is just that, like, this is still a young pitcher who's clearly making tweaks to his grips and to his approach and things like that. Those were some really positive changes to the four-seamer in terms of shape for Andrew Painter in the last start. So that's another thing to just keep an eye on in these starts against the Cardinals and the Angels, because it would be nice if 97 with 18 inches of vertical movement kind of, like, hung around as something more consistent for Andrew Painter.
And I do want to mention, of course, Eric is not just mentioning Cole because he's an NBC Sports guy. You know, this is an incredible thing. This is what everyone's reporting on here. And that is a big difference, because we had 120 stuff plus for Painter's four-seamer in that game, right? That's a PLV stuff plus here. I kind of wrote it off. I was like, okay, that's nice for one game, but I need to see him repeat that. I didn't have any information about the grip. I didn't know this. Awesome. That does make me more encouraged. Absolutely. So I'm going to upgrade that into at least a questionable start for Andrew Painter against the Cardinals. I already have that there against the Angels. But yeah, I am very much encouraged to see how this goes for Painter now.
And speaking of midseason adjustments, we get the Nationals. It's Miami this weekend, and then it's Colorado and Miami next week. That is a 7-game week because it's 4 games in Colorado. So it's 2 starts for Cade Cavalli and Andrew Alvarez. If you're in a 15-team league and you want to roll the dice on Andrew Alvarez in a 2-start week because it's Colorado and Miami, I get it. But just understand the volatility there. Cade Cavalli, this is my rant. In terms of midseason adjustments, we have to shout out what Cade Cavalli did.
Of course. Right?
With the added velocity, with the change in the pitch mix to add in the cutter. Since that happened, he has become a legitimate bona fide ace in terms of his production. There was upside. He's battled injuries. And so maybe it also has just taken time for things to click a little bit. But we have to acknowledge that this was not the version of Cade Cavalli that we were seeing all season. Right. And there's a narrative out there that like people shouldn't have been skeptical of Cavalli, or like he's an ace, he's always been an ace. This is a guy who through his first 17 starts of the season had a 4.07 ERA, had a 1.46 WHIP. That is a really detrimental WHIP.
Oh yeah,
through 17 starts. If you were using him through all 17 of those starts and got his 1.47 WHIP with just a 23% strikeout rate. Like, those are not good numbers.
And no, it's not.
They hurt your fantasy team.
Yes. Now,
we also have to be okay as a community with people in April and May being skeptical or cautious or out on a pitcher who then are in on a pitcher in July or August.
Oh, yeah.
We have to acknowledge that, especially pitchers, hitters can change approaches and stuff in the middle of the season. It happens a little bit less frequently. But we have to acknowledge that pitchers can make changes in the middle of a season that drastically change who they are and how effective they are as pitchers. And so it is okay to be skeptical of somebody or not fully in on somebody at the beginning of the season and then be in on them at the end. And it's also okay to say, hey, this guy wasn't really good for the first 2 months of the season. He was inconsistent and it wasn't really helpful. And yeah, he's great right now. And it's okay to say for those two things to be true, because those are the facts. That's the reality of what we have right now.
Oh, man. So this is clearly coming from a place that I understand. But Eric, if there's anyone that's like, how dare you be, you know, you were out on him before, I'm like, that's ridiculous. There's a reason why I do the list every week, everyone. Right? Like, it's because everyone changes. There's new information every single week. And one of my close childhood friends, who's a coach now in Brooklyn for soccer, has been for ages, he's a professional coach, gave me a line that like everyone has heard before, but he told this to me like 15 years ago. He said, you made the best decision you could with the information you had at the time. That is always what we do. And that information changes all the time. And it would be horrible for us to just stick to our guns because X, Y, and Z, we get more and more information. It's why I do the roundup every night. It's why I do the list every week, right? So it's, yeah, Cade Cavalli, if he continued to do what he was not going to be good. He is not that anymore. So we change our interpretation. It's just like with Noah Cameron. It's just like with Jacob Lopez. It's so on and so forth. The tune changes. You know, in the same way that if you want to judge that we're not in on Cade Cavalli, then he is. Okay, are you upset that we had Paul Skeens as like SP2? Like, yes, I mean, it's just... Right? So it's really just... It's one of those things of like, yeah, the season changes. I think the thing that bothers me the most is we have to all be honest about like what we are saying in the preseason of, hey, this guy's going to break out. I like this guy. Because if they break out in June or in August or in July, like you do not get credit for that breakout because no one's holding on to them through then. That was detrimental. Right. And you didn't predict that they would all of a sudden throw harder and throw a cutter in there too, and like 2 ticks more on the curveball. Like that stuff, unless you're telling me that's what it is, I'm not going to buy.
And if you believe a pitcher has upside, like, and you're in a league where you can hold them on the bench or whatever, by all means, like, do it. And if you're really sticking to your guns about a guy and you think it's going to happen and it happens, like, great, cool. You and I last year, like, maybe stubbornly held on to Gavin Williams in far too many leagues. But I think that you and I would both tell people, like, even when the results were really good for Gavin Williams for the second half of the season, it was for a process that I had no belief was going to, I had no idea that this is what he was going to do.
Right.
And also sometimes the results worked when I was like, I don't understand what's happening. I don't know
exactly.
How
that we're always completely honest with what's going on underneath, and it doesn't matter. And it's funny because we have the paradox of either like you have take lock or you are moving too much, and it's just like you can never win, you know.
And we have to as a fantasy manager too, you have to be fluid is basically the point of like
exactly
you can be out on a pitcher early and then notice a change and get back in. And we also as players need to do that. And it's like it doesn't matter if he was on your team and you dropped him 3 weeks ago and now you're like, oh, I gotta spend fab money to pick this guy back up. Well, did he make a change that you now want to add him for? Because if he did, then sure, spend the fab money back, pick him back up. It doesn't matter if you had already cut him, if you've already been burned by him or whatever.
Right.
If there's a change you support, go get that guy.
Exactly.
Speaking of getting guys, the Cubs got a lot of guys for their rotation. They face the Mariners this weekend. Then it's Arizona and Cincinnati. It's going to be a two-start week for Kevin Gausman, Arizona, and then home against Cincinnati. So not in Great American Ballpark. It hasn't been a great start to the Cubs' career for Kevin Gausman.
Yeah, look, this is one of those cases too of perfect example. I'm still in on Kevin Gausman because what is this? Why is it better for being on the Cubs? Because Babbitt should be a little bit lower. Not like amazing, but it should be better than it was with the Jays. And he's been singled out. And like, he's still getting whiffs. He should still be good. He's a low home run guy. I'm absolutely battling through this one. I feel like it should be much better moving forward. So I'm continuing to start Kevin Gausman. I push him into probable start and not auto start, but I'm still doing that. Showed him a Naga. I mean, he's at 91, 92 now, and he just got 10 strikeouts. Like, I think we're cool there. And otherwise, I mean, Clay Holmes just have as a questionable because he's not a strikeout guy. He is a win low ERA guy, bad whip, few strikeouts. That is the gamble you're playing here. You should be fine with that with the Cubs, but just recognize that it's not going to be the full package, the total package. I'm sorry, Jack Donaghy, all the time.
Yes. Clay Holmes bounced back after that bad first start with the Cubs. And so I continue to be kind of like in on the idea of Clay Holmes as a ratio play with the Cubs. The Reds are at Arizona this weekend, and then at San Francisco and these Chicago Cubs. It's two-start week for Chase Burns, which you feel good about because it's Chase Burns, even though that second start is against the Cubs. I feel less good about Andrew Abbott and Rhett Lauder against the Cubs, but Brady Singer and Nick Lodolo against the Giants, if you want to roll the dice against a fairly mediocre Giants offense, I'm okay with that.
All right, yeah. I mean, that sounds straight up to me. Andrew Abbott is doing Andrew Abbott things.
The Brewers, they get Atlanta this weekend, and then it's at the Mets and Texas. We know we don't get two start weeks for the Brewers right now. Mizorowski, Logan Henderson are, you know, almost like you have them as auto starts. They're pitching super well right now.
Right,
Kyle Harrison, the Mets should not scare you. And Kyle Harrison's pitching really well as well. Dustin May, I still think that the changes... The Brewers.
Oh, no. Okay. Did you watch? I put out a video, or at least I recorded it yesterday in Dustin May. Like, that was the most absurd, ridiculous getting singled out game. I want to say one out of the seven hits were above 80 miles per hour exit velocity. Like, it was dumb. And it's just how it is sometimes, I guess. Fine. He's still great. You should absolutely be leaning into Dustin May against the Mets. Don't let that start against the Mariners bug you out.
Yes. And yeah, Gasser, Shane Drohan, a little bit less confident in those two. Pittsburgh, they get the Dodgers this weekend, the Padres and St. Louis next week. It's two-start week for Braxton Ashcraft against the Padres and the Cardinals. Ashcraft has bounced back from a stretch in late July and early August that had people asking me if they should cut him. Two straight really good starts for Ashcraft. That's a nice two-start week for us. Bubba Chandler, you know, the results have generally been better, and we've talked about the change to the harder, tighter slider, but this isn't a Cade Cavalli situation where I think like the tweak has led to a pure breakout. I understand that the results in chunks have been better since he's moved to the harder, tighter slider, but it's not, I'm not getting tons more whiffs. I'm not feeling like this is the change we needed to unlock Bubba Chandler.
Yeah, it's look, I'll put it this way. You need to have just all the way through here. Skeens, what are you doing? You're trying to ham fist this with just four seamers. At least you had 97, but like the secondaries aren't doing enough. And that's what made him so cool was that he had this wide Swiss Army knife of pitches. He was a kitchen sink guy throwing hard. Now he's just throwing hard. And it's like, well, no, you got to be the kitchen sink guy too. Bubba Chandler is throwing more strikes, I think, with a slider, but he hasn't really like figured out how to pair that with a four seamer effectively. Jared Jones is almost there. He just has, it's just got to be consistency with the four seamer and the slider at this point. And Ashcraft, yes, he's gone deeper into games right now, but he's not getting whiffs on a slider anymore. And that's kind of scary, but the curveball has showed up a bit more, but he's going a little bit more with the fastballs. I don't know if I like that. And Carmen Muljinski, absolutely not.
Yep. The Cardinals, they get Philadelphia this weekend and then Baltimore and Pittsburgh next week. It's two-start week for Matthew Liberatore, but I don't love it. And Baltimore and Pittsburgh are fine matchups, but not matchups I need to attack. Kyle Leahy with added velocity has a lot of vert on that four-seam fastball and is now up over 90, around 95, I believe.
Yeah, right. I mean, he isn't over the top a little interested? Bit. I mean, I am. I'm. Those are both probable starts for me. And Leahy is just on too good of a tear for you to say no at this point. I dropped the ball a little bit when I didn't realize how good of a tear it was. Mm-hmm. It's as we talked about last week, we were just like, it doesn't quite make sense because I feel like he's not really commanding much and it's not that big of a change. And actually a week ago, Jay Crumpler put out the roundup on after I think it was on Wednesday night. And he did my fair Leahy, which I told him to do because I was going to do the roundup, then I couldn't. So he led with it and it's a great breakdown of just like what is actually different here. There really isn't so much. This could just be a hot stretch. Yes, the velocity is a little bit higher, but it is 7 feet extension. And that has always been the thing. I remember saying to Eno in the offseason because he was so high in Ashcraft. I was like, I'm not. And of course, I'm taking the L on that one. But I said, well, Kyle Leahy has like the same slider though. And well, how do we feel about that? You know, and he's like, well, it won't translate to being the starter, but actually it kind of has. Like he has the same velocity that he had. And yeah. There is something to be said about that. So, all right, we're going to go with Kyle Leahy. Now it's a great home park. I hope that he can command as well as he did in the last start, I think, actually, after the My Fair Leahy. Way better command overall with what he's doing.
Yeah.
So it's more believable. I'm still like, this could fall off in September, but again, we're just going to roll with this.
Yeah, and he might be interesting for 2027 because he's flashed some things throughout the year and maybe, you know, another full offseason as a starter and, you know, working through that could be interesting. We'll see. Mm-hmm. Moving on to the NL West to wrap us up, we get the Diamondbacks. They have Cincinnati this weekend, and then it's the Cubs and the Giants next week. There is a doubleheader potentially in. I think there's just a, I don't know if there's a doubleheader in there. Anyway, it's a three-game week. A three-game series against the Giants. So it is a two-start week for Merrill Kelly against the Cubs and the Giants. I don't mind that because I don't love the Cubs start, but you know I don't mind the Giants start. And Merrill Kelly, when he's locating and pitching well, can pitch well against most teams. We've already talked ad nauseum about Brandon Pfaadt and Eduardo Rodriguez and how they're continuing to do the things they're doing with location and basically weak contact.
Right. It is a little strange right now with understanding how the week is going. It's a to be determined, I think, for the Giants on that day on Sunday, because if you have Merrill Kelly going then, are they going to call someone up? It's a doubleheader right on Saturday, Littell and Kelly. And it's so Littell is there, by the way, guys, which is kind of funny to me in Arizona. And I don't know why the Nationals DFA'd him, but then they later did Michaelis, finally. Thank you. But with the Giants, all I really want to mention is that you do see, not the Giants, I'm so sorry, the Diamondbacks. I'm just going completely ridiculous right now. Mitch Brett, I'm not into, okay? I'm not. He had, I actually did this just for fun. I did a whole analysis of like games where pitchers have more strikeouts than whiffs. Is that like in any way sustainable that like they'll get the whiffs back and keep the strikeouts? And it's like, no. It's not. So if you ever see a game where it's more strikeouts than whiffs, you should be really tepid against it. The better correlation to strikeouts in the future, not strikeouts, it's whiffs. So when you have like nine, for example, from Liberatore and eight whiffs, yeah, not going to stick. Same thing with Bratt, who did the same thing. So I'm not interested in that one. Soroka needs to get his command back. It's not there. I think I'm going to still take a chance hosting the Reds, but it's not there yet. And it's his third game back from the IL. Meanwhile, Brandon Pfaadt against the Cubs is just too good. And he's probably going to get the Giants, I think, on that Sunday. I mean, that's not too long, Tuesday and Sunday. So that probably will be a two-step for him with Kelly going in that doubleheader, which makes sense. That's 5 games rest or 5 days rest. And Pfaadt is just, his command is insane right now, Eric.
Yeah, it's great.
It is unbelievable. He should have gotten a wonderful game of six innings, 2 runs. But then he allowed a 3-run homer with 2 outs in the 6th. And that just destroys me. It was the final pitch of his game. So careful, Icarus. Don't worry about that. It was a changeup also out of the zone and down.
And that's another mid-season adjustment covered in the pitch mix change that he changed his pitch mix to focus more on pitches he could command more. So it's less strikeouts, better command, better ratios, weaker contact. So that was an approach for Pfaadt. The Rockies, we're just not going to care.
Nope.
We don't have the time.
But I hope that Sugano gets his wins. I'm hoping for 15, man. 15 wins from Sugano, please.
Good for you, Sugano. So cool. You can do it.
I love it.
Maybe against Cleveland this weekend. Who knows?
Who knows?
The Dodgers. They get Pittsburgh over the weekend. They're at Atlanta and at Detroit. We know there's no 2 start weeks. Eric Lauer is when Glasnow, who continues to work his way back, is back. It's going to be probably it for Eric Lauer. It's a start against Atlanta, so I wouldn't make that start.
Before you continue, I do want to mention that Emmett Sheehan is not in this rotation. I initially thought he would, and I put him on the list, and I messed up. I kind of thought that they would put him in there, take out Eric Lauer, and be like, look, let's just have him in there, and then maybe even as a follower for some of these situations. And it doesn't really look like that. It looked like you're just going to transition him into a reliever for the playoffs. So I messed that one up. I shouldn't have had him on the list. But yeah, just looking at the rest of this, Eric, for the Dodgers, you have pretty much clear starts all the way through. Rookie Sasaki at Atlanta, do what you want to do. I just feel like he's a hipster at this point. And I have Tyler Glasnow as a questionable just because it's a still ill. But he did look really good in his latest AAA game. Mm-hmm. And he didn't have the slider for strikes, which is the number one thing, I think, for if you want pure dominance from Tyler Glasnow. But everything else is looking great. So do what you want in that questionable start. If you want to start him, awesome. But generally, that's a still ill. But yeah, Snell, Scooble, Yamamoto, we're obviously rolling with that. And I am curious with Eric Lauer, after this one, Wroblewski's on the IL. He could actually stick around theoretically because you don't have, you still have a sixth man, even with Tyler Glasnow in there, and you still want that sixth man. So I'm curious how that's going to play. Actually, yeah, that's how it's going to play out after this.
Yep. The Padres, Minnesota this weekend, Pittsburgh and Tampa Bay next week. It's set up to be a 2-start week for Robbie Ray, Pittsburgh and Tampa Bay. I'm curious what you've noticed from the changes about the changes for Robbie Ray since becoming a member of the Padres rotation.
It's interesting. I certainly was banging the table being like, yo, Robbie Ray's got to throw more 4-seamers upstairs to right-handers and sliders down and into right-handers. And in the last start, we started to see a little bit more of that change. But what's happening is, I talked about this with Eno on the craft. I think when pitchers make changes, they're drastically different. You're going to have success. Like the first game or two, if they can throw strikes with that change, then yes, you will have success because everyone's been training against a different pitcher with a trajectory machine. So when you see Robbie Ray throw more sinkers all of a sudden and you have a good start, awesome. That's what Slade Ciccone did against the Yankees earlier this year. He threw a ton of sinkers out of nowhere and it befuddled them. Mm-hmm. Now, you can't do that forever. And Robbie Ray is still kind of keeping the sinker over the 4-seamer to right-handers, and that's driving me nuts. You should have like 10% sinkers. It should be the surprise one. You think it's now a 4-seamer upstairs, and oh, never mind. It's a 2-0 pitch, and it's a sinker away instead, and you're now hitting the end of the bat as opposed to the 4-seamer that you thought you were going to crush. That's how that should work. And Robbie Ray, without that back foot slider to righties, is just not the same guy. What is crazy is that Robbie Ray has had an amazing stretch of like ERA. He's still good in this time, and I don't, it's like, how is this happening? I don't know. But I do think over time, we will see a better version of Robbie Ray with the Padres. And they're going to work really hard on this. Meanwhile, you have Michael King, who is, I don't know, man. It is so frustrating watching his scatter plots and shotgun blasts of and like worse stuff and just throwing strikes some days, some not. But he gets the Pirates, and the Pirates are not good right now, even if O'Neill Cruz is coming back. But just whatever. Last thing I'll mention, Joe Musgrove. Eric.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Joe Musgrove. I know you're muted right now, so it's okay. I got this. Joe Musgrove, as you look at Eric, you'll be like, oh my gosh, I can't believe
this. I'm not muted.
You were muted. And Joe Musgrove is throwing 95 in rehab. And the last time we saw him, it was like 92. It's kind of wild. I actually looked at every single year fastball velocity from Joe Musgrove since 2021, never at 95, always at 92, 93. And he did that for two games now in AAA, even when he extended to 70 plus pitches. I'm in on that. And he looks like he has two different cutters. One is like a proper cutter, like 90. One is a 87 mile per hour slider. I think he needs to throw that 87 mile per hour slider more than the sweeper and curve that he's been using. And I really hope we see that change, because I think that four seamer, even though it's a dead zone movement, it all of a sudden can be less hittable and damage him more than it did in the past if he's throwing it at 95. So that's awesome. It's what's kind of weird though is the velocity isn't like increasing on everything. It's just the four seamer, which is atypical. Usually you have some reason that is separate. Like it would universally affect things like your mechanics or you're getting more extension or whatever it is, but it's just in the four seamer. That's fine. Okay. Sure. Maybe it's a grip change. I don't know, but I'm excited about this. I'm actually going to make him a probable start. I'm breaking the rules of still ill and probable start against the Twins.
I blurbed Musgrove before, just comments that he said that this is the healthiest he's felt in over 2 years, which wouldn't be shocking if you look at his injuries over the last 2 years. But another thing that's just like, you know, good for him. Hopefully we get good, healthy Joe Musgrove back. If we get the added velocity, if that health translates, that would be a good thing down the stretch, probably more for deeper formats. But again, who knows? We'll see what he looks like.
Absolutely.
Ends with the Giants. The Giants get they're at Boston this weekend. Then it's Cincinnati and Arizona at home next week. It's two-start week for Adrian Hauser, Cincinnati, and the Diamondbacks. Are you at all interested in Adrian Hauser?
Yes.
In Blade Tidwell? In Carson Wisenhunt?
No.
Tugboat Wilkinson?
Okay, Tugboat is opening for Hauser. Okay, I'm glad that we got that.
I will say RotoWire has them starting separately next week. Now, we'll see.
That's because of the doubleheader. That's probably why that is there. So they need somebody to open or go the first game of it. Hauser go the second, and then you have Roop going on Sundays. Like, what's going to happen there? That's my guess, at least. With Adrian Hauser, I was really doubtful about the Guardians. I was like, okay, he's going to, Eric just disappeared on me. I was the one having all the technical issues. Now Eric is amazing. As we round up this podcast, rounded out Adrian Hauser, guys, he's throwing 96, 97 now with a four seamer. I remember being excited when he was throwing 94, 95 last year. And that four seamer with his sinker was all he needed against a left-handed lineup against the Guardians. I was really out on that one because his slider would not be effective against those lefties. Didn't matter. So now he hosts the Reds. Oracle Park is a wonderful place to pitch. I'm considering him a questionable start against both the Diamondbacks and the Reds in that two-step next week. I think in a 15-teamer, you should be circling Adrian Hauser 100%. Blade Tidwell, he only does well when he gets an extreme right-handed lineup. Why? Because that's when the sweeper can be incredible against down and away and get some strikeouts and whiffs. That's what we saw against an Astros from Blade Tidwell, and otherwise not very good. So I would not be risking this at Fenway and against the Diamondbacks even at home there. Landon Roop, obviously all things aside about putting the quote on the hat, Roop is someone who still gets incredible pitch separation, changeups and curveballs down, sinkers and cutters up. It's really impressive how accurate he is. Maybe it's precise, but it's not accurate. Accurate being inside the zone, precise being replication of the same approach. So to me, this is something that over time just becomes more refined. And I am seeing that since that night, he has been less consistent, and I do imagine that it didn't mess him up because the next game was much worse, and we've kind of seen that kind of staggering since. So that is a questionable start for me there, and Logan Webb is in that perfect rhythm.
We said we were not going to go long. We did go long, but there's some technical issues, and we got through all the pitchers we needed to. So hopefully we gave you more than enough information that you needed for this weekend and for next week. And with that, I'm going to bid adieu before my microphone decides to do it for me. So I am Eric Samulski, the Pelican.
I'm Nick Pollock, the Lion.
And we'll see you next week on the Quarter.